Hello there. Welcome to Flight Risk Studios podcast show. I'm your host, Robert Bruden. And today, what does the calendar say? March 7th, 2024. We're on a Thursday, so I hope you're getting ready for what could be an excellent weekend for yourself. Get some little relaxation and maybe get outside and do something fun. And I wanted to let you know, I just published a new book. It's out on Amazon, and it's called Echoes of a Lost Civilization, or Lost Civilizations, I should say. And what prompted me to write this is we're working on a couple of documentaries that, or I say a couple, we're working on two documentaries, but one of them specifically is on ancient civilizations. And what I've come to learn in the research and working with a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, Jessica Love, and is, man, there's a lot of stuff that you have to take pause, and some of it is going to sound a little conspiracy theorist, but you know, if you look at some of the things that are out there and you kind of go down that rabbit hole, you start to wonder, what? Come on now, what? You know, there's a lot of, you know, you got some of the UFO stuff coming out that that, you know, and a lot more is being released, and there's just so much stuff out there, and our government, you know, really puts us out in a situation where they're like, nothing to see here, keep it moving. And, you know, there's some places around the earth where regular folks are forbidden to go. And it's under the guise of, well, it's a safety issue. You know, there's the rocks could give way. Well, if they haven't given way in, you know, several thousand years, what makes you think they're going to give away today? And why can't you just go and anchor it up if you're so, you know? And why are some of these places really, if it's such a big deal, why are they heavily guarded by people who don't look like just normal Joe security guards? So you have to ask yourself, you know, what is it? What's out there? And you begin to question what we know and what we don't know, and who has the authority for us to know and what we don't know, based on what, you know? What makes you think it's like the UFO thing? I, you know, when you go under the guise of we're being invaded, you know, well, yeah, people are going to freak out. You know, it goes back to the old Orson Welles deal. You know, look at that. Everybody freaked out. Well, no shit, because they thought we were under attack. But if it was something where another species from another, you know, humanoids type species came from another galaxy far away, and they said, hey, we'd like to be friends. We'd like to be, you know, I subscribe to the things that Dr. Greer says. He, you know, it's not something that, you know, if these people, if they have this technology, why haven't they already killed us? Why have they not already, if they have all this knowledge that could wipe us completely out, and they have all this technology, and they and that we have to, from the government, we have to be protected from this information, for what? For what? So I love going back, and I want to thank my friend Jessica for, I found her on social media, and not because I was looking, it just came up on one of my feeds, and I listened to her show, and I was like, damn, this woman has got her shit together. She's got facts. She's got all kinds of things that back up every little thing that she says. And she really presents it in a way that when you think about it, you go, shit, she's right. So I reached out to her as a filmmaker and storyteller, and I said, hey, you know, I'd really like to expand on this more than just the, you know, the few minute videos that you're giving. I really think this would make a hell of a documentary. So for months now, she and I've been planning out and working on coming up with a documentary where, you know, we're gonna look at some places here in the United States. We're gonna go into South America, and then we're gonna move on into other places around the world. But you know, it's amazing how hard it is to get information on some of this stuff that is being suppressed in my view, you know. And it doesn't appear to me that the suppression has any other thing than it's going against someone's agenda, which, you know, that can be a good or bad thing. So it's also really cool to understand where do we really come from? What's really our background? And again, it's like, are there other species out there that, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I think it'd be cool as hell to meet some, you know, to say if they're friendly and they want to learn from us and we learn from them, then yeah, I'd be all on board for that. You know, if we're able to share in technologies and things like that, well, yeah. But there's going to be people that are going to put themselves in the middle for whatever reason. Well, we all know what that reason usually ends up being is greed. Sorry, I had to get a little glass of water there. But I go back to, it's kind of like yelling down the rabbit hole, and that's what here I came up with, Echoes of Lost Civilizations. Because, you know, when you look at some of the things that are found out there, you know, large-framed humanoid, elongated skulls, things like that, and all that stuff is really suppressed as much as it can be in the news. And there are places that literally in the Grand Canyon, Chaco Canyon, around the world where you and I aren't allowed to go visit. And I'm sitting there going, well, with the technology that we have, the robotics that we have for sending in, we can send in a robot to find a bomb in a horrible situation, but we can't use that same robot to go in if it's such a danger and film and photograph all of these caverns in order to, you can have a tethered, I have a tethered underwater ROV, for Christ's sake. You know, I get it. You can't put a, you know, when you get in a cave, you can't put a GPS in there because you're not going to get any sort of signal. However, you can put tethered equipment. And you can run down rabbit holes and take a look, and you can't tell me that they haven't already done that. They wouldn't have closed these up if they didn't know what the hell was down there. So it's not that I'm going to be able to, in our documentaries, get into these places, because you can't. But it's suffice to say, we can tell the story. You know, we can tell the story of what's going on in and around these areas. You know, if you don't know what Chaco Canyon is, it's in the Four Corners of New Mexico, Arizona, that area. And go in and kind of take a look at it. There's some really cool places within there. You know, it's very sacred to the Hopi Indians. There's, and also the dating back to the Pueblo people and other Indian tribes that are in and around that northern, northwest, northeast New Mexico tribes that all have something in their history that goes all the way back to the Chaco Canyon area, and it's really amazing what that history is. And so we go into, you know, we've all heard the stories of Atlantis and things like that, and there was a finding off the Cuban coast that that some Canadian surveyors ran upon, and a lot of it was dismissed as rock formations, but they were real specific rock formations, and now that area is forbidden to go to. You know, it's in Cuban water, so that makes it even harder to get any sort of permission to go, not to mention the fact that they state that it's in at least 2,000 feet of water. You know, well, back when this was first found versus today, you know, I want to say what, maybe 20, 30 years later, I don't have the exact dates in front of me, that technology is going to be much greater. And so you kind of have to sit there and go, okay, why don't we send an ROV down there? We have that ability to send ROVs and other things down there. Why is no one, looking for these things? Why are they not, you know, going back and seeing? And part of the mystique of all that is they're saying it could be tied to Atlantis. But there's not really any tangible evidence for that. And you're probably sitting here thinking, you know, why am I listening to all of this? You know, and again, it goes down to what we talked about in yesterday's show, is using our critical thinking to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, I'm getting one story, but I can't go find the other because you won't let me, you know? And so it does beg the question, hey, wait a minute, you know, why can't we know? And I think we all know that reason. I keep going back to it. The reason that we can't know is because of greed. And let me see. I'm trying to pull up something here. Here we go. I'm looking for a particular hang on just a second. Sorry, I know this is boring as hell. But looking into the Chaco Canyon National Park, which is all of this is all part of the national park system. And so I'm trying to find, though, because it ends up going up into Colorado, and it's killing me because I can't remember the Mesa Verde. Okay, so going into Mesa Verde, you know, and in and around the Chaco Canyon area, going all the way up into Colorado, into Mesa Verde, where there are kivas, which were large ceremonial areas, and underground. You know, a big chunk of this stuff is underground, so you have to ask yourself, you know, as big as some of these areas are, you dug it out with a primitive shovel of some making? Really? So, you know, you kind of ask yourself when you use your critical thinking mind, what's there? You know, and some of the theories would be, you know, that some of this stuff was built by advanced civilizations, and some advanced civilizations not of this world. So, you know, it's cool to run down that rabbit hole and see what is what, because it does change You know, if some of these things, you know, it goes back, it kind of goes back to too, is like, you know, the Vatican archives, where there are certain things in the Vatican archives, then nobody, unless it's the Pope, is going to see it. Because it could theoretically turn Christianity on top of its head. And I am a Christian person. I do subscribe to Christianity. I do call myself a Christian man. You know, I do believe in Jesus. Excuse me, guys. So, when there's huge amounts of evidence, you know, about lost cities, advanced cultures, it you know, there is a mountain in Arizona that is steeped in tradition. There's you know, mountains in Arizona that are part of the Hopi Reservation, and also hang on. So the hang on, let me see which. You know, when you go into, for example, Sedona, Arizona. If you've ever experienced Sedona, Arizona, I'm telling you will walk away a different person. You know, and so there's something to be said for all of this that makes it really cool to find out. And I'm following that mindset that I thought that was cool, that, you know, that Elon Musk talked about discovery and the things that we're going to do. And he says, damn, does everything that we have to do in our lives revolve around something that's bad? I don't look at any of this as bad. I look at it as something that's fun and kind of goes with really the main core of our podcast has always been about what makes us better, what makes us better people, what makes us happy. How do we maintain that? And I'm going to tell you know, run down a couple of these rabbit holes. Seriously, because what's cool is that you will find out quickly that there is a lot to be learned when you open your mind. And I'm telling you now, it's all pretty damn cool stuff when you start that journey. And when I first found out about, especially from Jessica, about this stuff off the Cuban waters, I was like, holy crap, you know? And when you start looking about the pole shift, if you're not familiar with the pole shift, you ought to be, because it's something that we're due in this, I want to say in this century. I know that sometimes a lot of this comes out, you know, where, oh, I don't have to worry about that. I don't have to worry about that. Well, you know, when, if you don't worry about it, and I'm not saying you have to worry about it. What I'm saying is that if you don't think about it, for God's sake, you know, you're living in a blind way that, you know, just I don't know. I'd rather know some of these things and understand and talk about it, and maybe at the end of the day we change everything because everybody's like, wow, here's something in my mind, that's actually a little more healthy for us to think about, you know? That might be something cool that doesn't involve our, you know, how shitty everything is in the world, and how we could come together. Because a lot of these places and a lot of the things that when you go back and you search into these ancient civilizations, you know, it's things that happen all over the world. It's not things that happen in just one general area. There's places you go back into these ancient civilizations that have things that should, in my mind, raise a question. They're not just in a certain place. They're all over the world. Everybody's experienced it. So, is there really not anything to it? I think that there is. Hang on. Let's see. Looking for something here. You know, there's a yeah, this isn't it. Doggone it. Anyway, we will move on here because I'm kind of wasting everybody's time and I know it. Sorry. So, it's something that that should raise your eyebrow, to say the very least. Okay, so anyway, I want to get into a little bit about what's in the book. You know, part one is Ancient Cities and Civilizations, The Enigma of Atlantis, Plato's Account of Atlantis, Theories on the Location of Atlantis, and The Cataclysmic End of Atlantis. You know, and was that a pole shift thing? You know, these are all good questions to ask. Mysteries of Ancient Egypt. And I think we can all agree that through so many of the documentaries and things that we've seen in the past, that Egypt certainly has its mystery. And, you know, the Great Pyramid, you can sit there and tell me that it was man-built, and you just, really? You could get where you can't even put a piece of paper through where the one square rock connects to another, that it fits so precise that you can't. How could in the day, you're going to tell me a dude with a hammer and a chisel could make a completely smooth surface? Really? And I should just go, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. He had a rock hammer and good luck with that. You know, we go in and talk about the Sphinx, the Osirian civilization, a lost golden age, sunken cities underwater. We talked a little bit about that in the first part of the show. You know, what was off Cuba, Dwarka, the legendary city of Lord Krishna, you know, Cuba's sunken city, a lost civilization, ? Maybe, you know, and why can't you go there? If I got caught going down there and, you know, first off, even if I could go do it, which I can't. But if you did do it, the government's never going to let it see the light of day. So they'll come in and seize your shit for national security. Which is how good ideas get suppressed. You know? Colossal stones and ancient mysteries, and we just talked about that. What, you know? Ancient technology. What was the technology that was available at the time where we're seeing all of this, these great monuments to man, and you're sitting there going, we'd have a hard time building that shit today, much less without any real tools or any real way to get that significant weight moved. So it's kind of cool to think, how the hell did they do it? I think, you know. You know, we talk about the science of pole shifts, Earth changing poles, magnetic reversals, crustal displacement, and true polar wander. The controversial ideas of Charles Hapgood, ancient myths, stories of cataclysm. So, you know, there's, we get kind of delve into sun comets, potential triggers for pole shifts, solar flares, coronal mass ejections. You know, there's commentary impacts on ancient cataclysms, the controversial ideas of Emmanuel Velikovsky, if I probably butchered his name, but hopefully not. Agartha, Shambhala, and some of you are probably going, you know, and then Hollow Earth, fact or fiction. So explain to me how the South Pole in a certain area of the set, because you can go to the South Pole, but there is an area of Antarctica that is an absolute no-fly zone. Google Earth blocks it out so you can't see it. Why? What's there that they don't want us to see? You know, again, it, to me, that it just seems like if some of these things were out there and some of these things are really there, why are we being taken out of that equation? Why can't we see it? You know, if there's some really cool inner earth place, why can't we see it? Why can't we communicate with these folks, with, you know, the common folk, if you will? Why would we not be able to see and understand and learn from folks from a different place? You know, we're a tapestry of woven countless history, mystery. Our world is woven together with all of that. Why can we not share it, and why can we not know more about it than what we do know? Because some of the keys, in my view and in my opinion, some of the keys are out there. We just don't have the clearance, if you will, to go learn more about it. There's just too much talk where it just is like, I'm calling bullshit. I'm saying, hey, this, it probably is true. So it's just like Area 51. We all know it's there. And I'm sure by now there are other places. In fact, they say there's a base in Arizona that's even more secret than that. And I think there's another one in Utah that has the same distinction. You know, they're there in plain sight. and, you know, as the herd were told, nothing to see here, folks, keep it moving. You know, never once, and I grew up in the during the Cold War, and the White Sands Missile Range in outside of Holloman Air Force Base in Alamogordo, New Mexico. The White Sands Missile Range was a pretty top secret area. They'd ran a lot of missile stuff and did a lot of things in White Sands that were top secret things. And we used to sit, if you went on the gondola at Sierra Blanca, now called Ski Apache, but if you went and rode the gondola up to, and it was 11,500 feet at that point at the ski area, you were awfully high. And if you just walked 20 or 30 yards behind the gondola house, guess what you were looking at? An unobstructed view of the White Sands Missile Range. I can't tell you how many times as kids that we sat up there and watched, and especially during government war maneuvers and things like that. And I never saw anything that freaked me out or made me freak out, and I didn't see a spaceship land in the middle of the White Sands Missile Range. And so, you know, I made it all through it. And you know, who knows, they even, there is even a conspiracy theory out there that Ike talked to aliens at the end of the runway at Holloman Air Force Base. I was born in Roswell, New Mexico, and what was crazy is, it was when I was a kid, and we would go to Roswell because we ended up living in Rio Doce, and we would go to Roswell as children. There wasn't anything. There wasn't a UFO museum. There wasn't any of that kind of stuff, or it was so obscure we didn't even know about it. I did know that the air base there, at one point in time, was the only nuclear capable air squadron in the world that was located there. And they did, you know, the Roswell UFO stuff that, you know, everybody said, I mean, the air base there, the Army air base there, was in the big middle of all that. But really, it wasn't a big deal until the Area 51 started getting popular, and you know, some of these conspiracy theorists started to become more mainstream. So it was, you know, it was a lot of cool stuff to see, you know. But we never went out to the crash site or anything like that, and we would never go to where they detonated the nuclear bomb in New Mexico. Hell, you can go out there with a Geiger counter today, and there's radiation. So, you know, and that's, you know, all part of, if you've seen the movie Oppenheimer, then you'll know what I'm talking about. And the crazy shit with all of that, it was their best guess that we wouldn't implode our planet, or that we wouldn't do damage beyond anything that we were capable of understanding. You know, every time they've exploded some shit like that, you know, you got to sit there and wonder, you know, they don't, because if you've never done it, then you can't really tell me with any real tangible, you can say, well, you know, all our calculations say, you know. But until you blow the son of a bitch up, guess what you don't know? You don't know what the fuck's going to happen. And at the end of the day, you got to go, well, fuck, we dodged that bullet.
So, there you have it.
So, according to Plato, and we're going to get off the deal and go back in towards the book when we're talking about Atlantis. According to Plato, Atlantis was a prosperous island nation with abundant natural resources, sophisticated infrastructure, and a thriving culture. So, studying all of this stuff, and then the end of Atlantis, and no real, or at least we don't have real access to what could or could not have happened. Mayan civilizations, Central America, ancient Greeks, all have stories and legends resembling Plato's account of Atlantis. So that kind of, because when you go down this rabbit hole, folks, I'm here to tell you, you start looking into ancient Egypt and all that kind of stuff, and you're sitting there, well, what does that have to do with anything that's going on today? I can't pay my electric bill, my car payment's past due, all of this kind of shit. And I'm going to say that if you don't, and this is where it gets back to the crux of what I do, is if you don't find something like this or this that you find interesting, it's like I can't continue to do a podcast show that's always focused on the what ifs of your mental health, or the what ifs of tragedy or loss in your life, the what ifs of divorce. At some point in time, we have to sit here and occupy our mind with something that rises us above all of that. What do we do to get better? Well, here you go. That's what we're talking about. I wrote a book that's completely off the scale of what I would normally write. And I've been doing that. I partnered up with a friend and we did some kid snack stuff and published a little, healthy snacks for kids. And some things, that you could do with your child to have a little fun. Create a healthy snack. Because if you look at all the shit we have to eat in this world and all the shit we shovel down our kids, all right, let's just go get a Happy Meal. Have you seen what's in a fucking McDonald's French fry? Or what makes up a chicken nugget? And I'm not judging or throwing a stone because I eat the shit too. But I'm just saying, there really comes a point where we have to stop and retrain our mind to look at other things. Because if we're all going to live together and we're all going to be a part of each other's culture, which we should be, I don't want to go to the Middle East and kill a Muslim person any more than I hope that they don't want to come over here and kill me. Because you can't tell me that a regular Joe person sitting, in a coffee shop, worried about his family, gives two shits about my woes and concerns. As long as I'm not fucking with him, guess what? He ain't gonna fuck with me. Which is the way that it should be. Sometimes you have to ask yourself about the arrogance of people who go over to another world, to another, what I'm talking about, to another country, and say, well, the way you've been doing shit since before Christ walked on this earth is wrong. Do it our way. I'm not saying that people don't have rights. They do. They all should do. Look what William Wallace did for Scotland. What if you don't have freedom? So that really boils down to, if you take that metaphorically, that really boils down to what I'm doing here, is I'm talking about stuff that, you know, not only is incredibly interesting, and no, it doesn't, you know, it's not going to change my life one way or the other, most of the information, but what it does do, it gets me to open up my mind. And that's the whole thing about learning. Massage that muscle. You know, I remember as kids, we were always saying, I don't know what the hell we're going to do. When we were in algebra class, going, I don't know what the fuck we're going to do with all this. Have you ever figured a car payment? Have you ever figured a mortgage payment? Have you ever figured a return on investment? Did you ever calculate interest rate so you'd know just how badly you were getting screwed? Do I use that on a daily basis? No, but do I use it? Yeah, at some point in time. At least I have a calculator, yes. But if I don't understand the information the calculator's spitting out or how we got to it, then what the hell good is the use of it? So what was really cool when I was researching this, and we were doing some research, and we found that beneath a vast expanse of ocean, there are secrets and passages of time that are underwater now, that are, you know, sunken cities, underwater ruins around the globe. So why are they that way now, you know? And it really begs the question, you know, what cataclysmic event had to happen in order for that to happen, you know? So if what they found out off the coast of Cuba is really 2,000 feet beneath the water, what cataclysmic event had to happen for that to happen, you know? And then you got so-called scientists that are government-run scientists that are saying, well, it's just rock formations. Well, for such a wide array of an area to be set in one way, the odds of that, I'm not saying it's not true. I'm just saying it would take a second look or a third look to go down and say, well, let's go down and take a look. Even if it, you know, and here's the thing. Even if it is, and there's not really supposed to be anything there, then why would we not want to find out about that? What's being suppressed from us that we don't have any right to know? And what the hell? Okay, so it is there. There's some huge, gigantic city. How is that going to change anything other than history? And if it changes it for the better, what's the harm? Where is the harm? So, you know, that's what makes all this fun. And that's what, you know, when you think about the technology that has to be used to find these places and discover and what archaeologists use and history enthusiasts. You know, when you go on Amazon, for example, just type in telescope and you'll find a bajillion space telescopes. Why? Because people are curious. They want to see the moon. They want to see planets. They want to see the comets. They want to see nebulas and all the things that are made up of the universe, because why? Does it make me more money tomorrow? No. But it does get my mind thinking. It does get it moving. It does, you know, give me some thought. It gives me something to talk about that, quite frankly, when you're telling me those stories, it makes you interesting. Kind of cool. You know, part of a paragraph in the book, you know, regardless of whether the Cuban underwater ruins are ultimately proven to be artificial or natural, they reflect a broader pattern of intriguing and enigmatic structure found beneath the waves. From the submerged stones and circles of Lake Michigan to the underwater pyramids of the Azores. These sites challenge our understanding of the past and raise questions. And that should intrigue at least some of you. It's certainly not going to intrigue most of you, but it is certainly should intrigue some of you. Because at the end of the day, it really just gives you some insight as to where we're from and what's really going on. Scattered across the globe are ancient megalithic structures that have stood the test of time. Think about the storms and the weather and the rain, sleet, snow, hail. All of the things that these structures have to endure for literally centuries and are still standing, still in precise alignment. Think about that for a sec. They're still standing in precise alignment. That's pretty cool. That shit has stood there through all kinds of crazy shit. And nobody's can really with any convincing that it was done one way, you know? You just kind of got to sit there and go, yeah, I'm going to kind of hold out for, you know, Pyramids 2.0 before I buy into the fact that it was built with slaves from rock quarries that were, 85 miles or some shit away. You know, they talk about, and this should get to you, climate activists, which, don't get me wrong, I'm not judging. I'm just saying and that's what we talked about in a previous episode, was critical thinking. I think if you look at climate change from a critical perspective and you say, I don't know, you know, let's, you know, I'm still waiting, because here's the thing. From as far back as I can remember, there's always been some cataclysmic event that was man-made, that was going to destroy the earth. Yet here we are. And it was going to destroy the earth, you know, maybe a decade or two ago. Yet we're still here, still standing. You're still breathing air. Super gluing your hand to the freeway ain't going to change nothing. No, I'm sorry. Other than you're going to get some pissed off truck driver that's probably going to pummel your ass to get out of his way because he has to make a living. And all the people that you're blocking have to make a living or have to get home to their children or simply are just done with the day. Man, they're just trying to get through. And you fucking up my day is only going to make me want to burn more fossil fuel. Just saying. You know, you go look at the science of pole shifts. We've had major cataclysmic and earth climate events in this realm as far as we can go back that had not a damn thing to do with a cow farting on a, you know, on a ranch. Well, it's the cars. Well, the cars have better emissions today than they have had in, you know, other than Volkswagen fucking up the diesel thing. Lying about their carbon emissions. But for the most part, the car manufacturers have done and made great strides in limiting all of that. And if you rode your bike to your protest because you're saving the planet, how was your bike built? How are the tires made on that bike? How is the chain made that moves your bike? The metal that built your bike? And the labor of the factory, the cost of the factory where it was made, and what pollutants did that? And then what greenhouse effect does that have? And what pollution effect does making your bicycle that you rode to your protest? You know, everybody ride a bike. Well, okay, I'm arguing that the bike produces its own pollution, its own problems. So you can argue all this shit all the way you want to. So that's why I'm saying go look and be open to the fact that there might be other things that are causing, you know, if you look at it and study things about the pole shift, if this shit really happens and the earth stops spinning from 1,000 miles an hour and stops spinning and starts going the other way, where in the good Lord's name are we going and all the shit that's around? Well, we won't know. But it's scary to think about all that. You're going to tell me that the things on the ice age, that shouldn't freak you out? And again, there was no manufacturing, no nothing in that time. But there was a cataclysmic event. So cataclysmic events within the world, they're going to happen, whether we like it or not. And you can argue all day that we're fueling that, but you can line up just as many scientists that say that that's bullshit as you line up that says that the world's coming to an end. So it's, you know, if I can't change it, and me super gluing my hand to a Picasso ain't gonna get us there, then, you know, do your part. Do what you can. But remember, what happened to make the batteries in your electric car happen? What happened in cobalt mining, lithium mining, the steel that it takes to make your bicycle chain, the tires for your bicycle? How much pollution did it take to make the things that you say are going to save the earth And if you're really that strong against it, then I'm going to go against your bite. Because when you take this into consideration, the steel that it takes to make your bicycle, then, you know, and how many millions of bicycles are made, well, you know, hell. Then we need to stop our bike. We need to walk. Because the only thing that really doesn't make any pollution is walking around naked. Because what about the rubber on your shoes? Your sandals, your Birkenstocks, the t-shirt that you wore, the cotton that it took to make the t-shirt that you're wearing, and the tractors that had to be used in order to process the cotton for the t-shirt that you wore today that says Save the Planet. So learning about all of these things and applying them to things that are really first on our minds today makes you think. And what I'm hoping, and here's the really cool part, what I'm hoping is that it sparks you to think about, okay, well, if fossil fuels, for example, are the thing, how do we make that better? If coal really would power so much stuff on the earth, how can we retard its pollution to the point that it makes it acceptable to use? That's your Nobel Prize. Instead of figuring out ways to kill each other in mass industrial military complex, show me how we could use coal. How valuable would that be to be able to burn coal safely, mine it safely, and done so correctly with very too little or no impact? How could we do that? That's your Nobel Prize. That's also an industry that would make you gobs and gobs and gobs and gobs and gobs of money if that was your quest. So, I'm hoping that you're kind of seeing where I'm going with this and you're not going, damn, this dude's boring as shit. I hope this is not boring to you. That there is a reason that we study all of these things. It's so that we understand from our past what's making our future. And what could be out there that if we just knew it, maybe some things could really be changed. I'm hoping to include on a documentary that Jessica and I are working on our hopefully new friends at the Hopi Indian Reservation. But they have a complex cosmology deeply rooted in their observations of the sky and the movements of celestial bodies. The Hopi believe the universe is divided into three worlds, each ruled by different deities and forces. That's pretty cool. And so, therefore, the Hopi prophecies are closely tied to their observations of the sky, particularly the movement of the sun, moon, and stars. The Hopi believe that celestial events, including an excellent blue star in the sky, the alignment of certain constellations, will mark the end of the fourth world. The idea that everything is cyclical. So is when you look and you open your mind to other things, and I'm not picking on, nor am I judging environmentalists or people who super glue their hand to a Picasso, but what I'm suggesting is there could be higher things than just me running down to the 7-Eleven in my Chevy truck that make it worse on the world. We all can do things to lower our carbon footprint. You know, we can all do things that, instead of driving around the park, I walk around the park. When I go to a location to film or do things, you know, it could make it sometimes easier for me to drive through, but a lot of times I just try to walk through. So, you know, choices to do things like that are based on things that I've learned from my past and things that I hope for in my future. So is it important to learn these things? Absolutely. Because you can apply it the way that I'm doing. You can apply it to so many things in your life now. That makes it pretty damn cool. All right. Well, we're going to shut this bad boy down. And I appreciate very much. I hope you know, I know I kind of ranted about a few things, but there was a point for that. And we can all live in peace. We can all live harmoniously. It's just like I know I've kind of, for lack of a better word, picked on, you know, environmental soldiers today. But it's something where I want to say that, yes, I believe in your cause. Yes, I believe in... that we should be environmentally friendly. I live on the coast, and I worry like hell because there's chemical plants, a nuclear power plant, and all kinds of shit down here so close to the water that it's scary. One wrong move. And when I'm talking about just an industrial accident, something that some poor miscreant soul went to work today. They didn't wake up and go, gee, I wonder if I can flip the wrong switch today. Or I wonder if I can leave something on that I was supposed to turn off because I forgot. Or I just was so busy I missed it and caused this cataclysmic event to happen that's destroying so much. So it does all tie together. It's amazing when you go down these rabbit holes how much everything ties together and how much it ties us together in the same pursuit of happiness, health, a family. Doesn't matter what your gender ideology is, doesn't matter what your religious ideology is, it doesn't matter whether you're white skinned, dark skinned, doesn't matter. What matters is that we're all here. We are all together. So, and we're all tied to the same events that if you look at these historical events, these cataclysmic events such as pole shift, that we're all tied to that. If there's a pole shift, all these people can go down in these bunkers and shit. Yeah, good luck to you. Especially if you're, you know, 2,000 feet under the water now. Now you're a ruin. So we're all tied to this. So we can all do better in helping each other and perhaps learning how to foster new technologies and new ways of thinking, new ways to do things. And let's do that. Let's be friends. All right, guys. I hope you will follow the link in our bio. It'll take you to my Amazon author page. I'm really excited about this book. We've got a couple of, like I said, I've got a couple of documentaries in production, and my one that's about the things I wrote in this book, I'm very excited about. I think that it's interesting stuff, and I think you can apply it to what you know today. All right. God bless you. I hope that your life is blessed and that you're having a better today than you had yesterday. So anyway, this is Robert Bruton with Flight Risk Podcast Studios. Bye for now.